Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. A short announcement is that we are planning a special podcast for Pesach. The plan is to have it be available either later this week or on this Sunday in time for Pesach. In this podcast, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Tzav. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's parsha is Parshat Tzav. As in last week's parsha, our parsha also focuses on the sacrifices. Last week, I discussed the structure of the parsha, and we saw a very interesting development. There are five types of sacrifices discussed, which parallel the five chapters. Chapter 1, Korban Olah. Chapter 2, Korban Mincha. Chapter 3, Korban Shlamim. Chapter 4, Korban Chatat. Chapter 5, Korban Asham. It begins with Chatat, it concludes with Asham. Our parsha begins in a parallel way. The first sacrifice discussed, Korban Olah, the burnt offering, in chapter 6, verse 2. Then we go on in chapter 6, verse 7, to discuss Korban Mincha, the meal offering. We would have expected that the next sacrifice to be discussed, Korban Shlamim, the peace offering. But instead we find in chapter 6, verse 18, we discuss Korban Chatat, the sin offering. In chapter 7, verse 1, Korban Asham, the guilt offering. It is only in chapter 7, verse 11, that we get to the discussion of Korban Shlamim, the peace offering. Why the change? Perhaps one could even add, why the repetition? We've already discussed the sacrifices in Parshat Vayikra. Why go over them again in Parshat Tzav? If we examine the Parsha closely, we will see that this is not a simple repetition. But in fact, we are looking at the sacrifices from a different angle, from a different perspective. In Parshat Vayikra, we looked at the sacrifices from the perspective of the one who is bringing them. And in fact, the order is, we begin with a discussion of the voluntary sacrifices. We then go on to a discussion of the obligatory sacrifices. I would perhaps add, we begin with a discussion of the sacrifices that ideally one should bring as an expression of their closeness to God. As we discussed last week, Korban from the root karov, to be close. We end the parsha not only with a discussion of the obligatory sacrifices, but of the sacrifices which are brought to repair a rupture in our relationship with God. The sin offerings, the guilt offerings, the sacrifices that are meant to enable us to restore our relationship with God and perhaps with the community. Our parsha is looking at the sacrifices from the perspective of the Kohanim, who are offering them up on the altar, who are doing the service in the Mishkan. And the significance of the order in our parsha is based on the degree of holiness of the sacrifices. We begin with a discussion of those sacrifices that are called Kodesh Kodashim, Holy of Holies. The quintessential Holy of Holy sacrifice is the Korban Olah. Why? It is totally burnt on the altar, given over completely to God. it is followed by Korban Mincha, where there is also an instance where it is completely burnt on the altar. Chapter 6, verse 16. If the one who brings the Korban Mincha is a priest, his meal offering is totally burnt on the altar. Then we go on to talk about the sin offering, which is also called Kodesh Kodashim. And in the case of the sin offerings, in chapter 6, verse 23, those sin offerings where the blood is sprinkled inside the tent of meeting are not to be eaten. They are to be totally burnt. And then we go on to the last of the Holy of Holies, which is the guilt offering. Interestingly, the guilt offering, there is no instance of where it is totally burned. Rather, a portion of the sacrifice is burnt on the altar. The bulk of the sacrifice is eaten by the priests in a holy place. Chapter 7, verse 7. A holy place being the courtyard of the tabernacle, or later on, the courtyard of the temple. And if we backtrack, we'll see that the same is true generally by sin offerings. In chapter 6, verse 22, we're told that all the male priests shall eat it. And if I backtrack to the meal offerings, chapter 6, verse 11, once again we are told, all of the males of the sons of Aaron shall eat it. So that what characterizes sacrifices that are holy of holies, Kodesh Kodashim, is that in essence, the sacrifices are offered up to God, should be burnt on the altar. And in a number of instances, that is exactly what happens, totally, in the burnt offering, in the meal offering brought by a priest, in this case of the sin offering, where the blood is sprinkled in the inside of the temple. But perhaps I should make it clear. In the case of the sin offerings where the blood is offered, sprinkled on the inside of the temple, it is not totally burnt on the altar, but the bulk of the animal is burnt outside the camp. But as an extension of this burning of the animal on the altar, there is the idea of the priests who eat the sacrifice in a holy place before God. And as we find in a number of places in the Talmud, the priests are described as eating from the table of God. It is as if God has now said, rather than giving me the meat to eat, bringing it on my altar, I am now inviting the priests to join me in my courtyard. As I mentioned, all of these sacrifices are Kodesh Kodashim, but peace offerings are Kodashim Kalim, are light holy sacrifices. The reason being, because the sacrifice is meant primarily to be eaten by the person who brings it. It is not meant to be totally burned on the altar. It is not meant to be basically consumed by the priests. It is meant to be eaten by the people who bring it. And it would seem to be that the people who bring it cannot totally eat it themselves. They will have to invite others to join them. So that Korban Shlamim is a bonding experience of the community. It is not eaten in a holy place, in the courtyard of the temple. It is eaten in a lesser place in the city of Jerusalem. Or, in the case of the Jews in the desert, in the encampment of the Jewish people. Jerusalem and the encampment of the Jewish people are also holy places, but of a lesser order. So that in our parsha, we are listing the sacrifices according to their degree of holiness. The degree of holiness being a function of how much are they brought on God's altar, or how much are they consumed by people. Is the focus of the sacrifice God, or is the focus of the sacrifice the person? I would like to examine specifically a subset of Korban Shlamim, of the peace offering, and that is chapter 7, verse 12. It says, Im al todah yakrivenu, if he offers it up as a thanksgiving offering, v'hikriv al zevach ha-todah, and he will offer, together with the sacrifice of the thanksgiving offering, chalot matzot belulot bashemen, loaves of matzah mixed with oil, rikikei matzot, wafers of matzah, mishuchim bashemen, smeared with oil, solet murbechet, flour that has been deep fried, chalot belulot bashemen, loaves that are mixed with oil, al chalot lechem chametz, together with loaves of chametz, yakriv korbano, he will bring up his offering, al zevach todat shlamav, together with the sacrifice of the thanksgiving offering. And then we're told, he will take one of each of the offerings, in this case the meal offering, and give it to God. Give it to the priest who has sprinkled the blood of the peace offering. To him it shall be. And then we're told, and the meat of this thanksgiving offering shall be eaten on that day. Do not leave it over till the following morning. So let us examine these laws that I've just read. And maybe I'll start with the last thing. A korban todah, a thanksgiving offering, must be eaten on the day that it's brought, which includes the following night, a day and a night. It cannot be left over to the next morning. When we read chapter 7, verse 16, it goes on to say, Vim nederon edava, but if it is a free-willed offering, zevach korbano, the sacrifice which he's bringing, b'yom hakrivot zivcho ye'achel, on the day that he brings it, shall be eaten, umimachorat, but on the following day, and on the following day, v'hanotar mimenu ye'achel, that which is left over, he shall eat. And whatever is left over from the sacrifice, verse 17, b'yom hashlishi ba'esh yisaref, on the third day, it shall be burned by fire. A regular korban shlamim, a regular peace offering, which is brought voluntarily, is eaten 2 days and a night. The day that it is brought, the following night, and the following day. It is not to be left over to the third day, and if it is, it is to be burnt then. But a thanksgiving offering is limited. It can be eaten only the day it is brought and the following night. In a way, the thanksgiving offering is similar to the offerings which are holy of holies. Because when the sin offering is eaten by the priests, or the meal offering is eaten by the priests, it too can only be eaten for a day and a night. And this is why the Torah, when it begins the discussion of the peace offerings, starts off with the thanksgiving offering. Because the thanksgiving offering is a transition. It is somewhere between a holy of holy sacrifice and a light holy sacrifice, in that it is more restricted in its time of eating. Next thing. The thanksgiving offering is accompanied by 40 loaves as a meal offering. According to the verse and the rabbinic interpretation, there are four sets of loaves. Each set, 10 loaves, 30 of which are matzah, 10 are chametz. For this reason, a Thanksgiving offering is not brought on Pesach. And in fact, it's not brought the day before Pesach, because one would have to finish eating it very early on that day in order not to transgress the rabbinic and later on Torah prohibition of eating chametz even on the day before Pesach. In order not to limit the eating of the sacrifice, and perhaps as a result of that, to cause it to become disqualified, the practice was to not allow Thanksgiving offerings to be brought the day before Pesach. So too, the day before Yom Kippur, because one would not be allowed to eat it Yom Kippur Eve, the night of Yom Kippur. So we do not want to bring it to a state of disqualification. In Masechet Brachot, in the tractate Brachot, it says that there are four people who are obligated to give thanks to God. And in the context of Masechet Brachot, they're referring to the blessing, what's known as Birkat HaGomel, which is recited in four situations. What are they? Yordei Hayam, those who have gone down to the sea, have crossed the sea. Holchei Midbarot, those who traveled through the desert. Misha haya chole v'nitrape, someone who was sick and was healed. Misha haya chavush b'vet ha'asurim v'yatza, someone who was imprisoned in jail and was released. The four situations described are in fact the four situations for which someone would have to bring a Thanksgiving offering. The common denominator of these four situations is the deliverance from a life-threatening situation. Traveling at sea was seen as being very hazardous. For example, the Book of Jonah. Storms are not uncommon. As a result, when one crosses the sea safely, one should now express their thanks to God. And we actually see this in the book of Jonah. When this storm subsided, the sailors went and expressed their thanksgiving to God. Traveling through the desert, hazardous, treacherous, the lack of water, the heat, one could very easily die. So that one, when one makes it safely across the desert, they express their thanksgiving. One who was sick, in the assumption, someone who was deathly ill, who recovers. One who was in jail, where theoretically they could have also perished. In all of these instances, one is obligated, in the time of the temple, to bring a thanksgiving offering. Now that we no longer have a temple, one is obligated to express their thanks to God, Birkat HaGomel, the blessing which speaks of how God extends his kindness and mercy to all who extended it to me. The rabbis base themselves on Psalms 107, which actually describes the four instances of wandering through the desert, of being healed, of being released from imprisonment, and of being saved from the perils of the sea. And in each instance, it speaks of how people cry out to God, and how God responds, and of how they expressed their thanksgiving. I want to note two halachot, which I cited earlier, in connection with the Thanksgiving offering. First, it is limited in the time that it can be eaten, to a day and the following night. The reasoning behind this seems to be, by limiting the time, there is a necessity created to have more people involved in eating it in order to guarantee that it will not be disqualified, become notar, left over, beyond its time. By involving more people in the eating of the Thanksgiving offering, it publicizes the miracle, Pirsum HaNes. It enables the person to sanctify God's name in public. Second halacha, the sacrifices generally are not allowed to be chametz. Meal offerings are supposed to be matzah. This is expressed in last week's parsha and in this week's parsha. In last week's parsha, in chapter 2, verse 11, all meal offerings that you bring to God shall not be made chametz, because leaven and honey should not be offered up on the fire to God. In our parsha, chapter 6, verse 10, when it also speaks about the meal offering, do not bake it to be chametz. This is referring to Aaron and his sons who will be eating it. In verse 9, matzot teachel, let them eat it as matzah in a holy place. So here we have an anomaly. Generally, meal offerings can only be matzah. And now all of a sudden we are allowing chametz. Commentaries in general see the difference between chametz and matzah as follows. Matzah is meant to express a profound sense of humility. Chametz is associated with arrogance. The idea of something which is inflated. We could perhaps say our inflated egos. The whole idea of the meal offering is to express our humility before God, specifically in terms of our possessions, having worked the field with all the efforts we displayed, to then come before God and to acknowledge, it's not me who did it, it's you, God, and I thank you. I come before you with a profound sense of humility. But in the case of the Thanksgiving offering, the circumstances in which the person found himself were quite humbling. To be on the verge of death, and perhaps there's the need for an element of empowerment. Although the person brings 30 loaves of matzah, which express that sense of humility, and perhaps highlight how the person was on the threshold of death, there are the additional 10 loaves that try to empower that person, to make them realize that they have restored their human dignity. It is important for that person to come before God not as someone who's broken, but on the contrary, as someone who is now come back to himself or herself, and to be able to now express how grateful they are to God that they are once again empowered. Although the Korban Todah is primarily meant to be eaten, is a way of community building, perhaps it is similar to the Holy of Holy Sacrifices in that it is now bringing us closer to God. Perhaps in a case where we felt very much abandoned by God, to have now experienced such a miraculous deliverance, to now highlight how much we feel in the presence of God, similar to the priests in the temple. I mentioned earlier that a Korban Todah is not brought on Pesach. even the day before Pesach. I would like to suggest that in the time of the temple, the Pesach offering itself was a type of Korban Todah. Korban Pesach is also a Korban, a subset of Shlamim, but it is even more limited in its eating time framework. It can only be eaten the night of Pesach, not during the day, not the following day, only that night. This obviously parallels, or perpetuates, I should say, the original Seder of the Jewish people when they were in Egypt, described in chapter 12 of Exodus. On the one hand, Korban Pesach, the Pesach offering, is an expression of our Jewish peoplehood and was critical in bonding us as a community. But on the other hand, the Korban Pesach is an expression of our gratitude to God for delivering us from slavery to freedom, for taking us out of the house of bondage, for healing all those who were sick. In later generations, it also became an expression of thanking God for helping us cross the sea, for helping us to make it through the desert, so that the Korban Pesach perhaps became the expression collectively for the Jewish people of giving thanks to God and appreciating that even in moments when it seems that we're on the verge of utter destruction, God is there and can bring about a miraculous deliverance. Today, we have no Korban Pesach, but perhaps the way that we express this idea is in all the singing which is done at the Seder. Not only do we sing Dayenu, not only do we sing the Hallel, we also do what's called Hallel HaGadol. Hodu Lashem Kitov Kili Olam Chasto. Give thanks to God, for His mercy endures forever. And in later generations, there were all the piyutim that were added, all of which are expressions of praise to God. If on the night of the Seder, we are meant to experience the movement from slavery to freedom, perhaps the most elemental expression of a free person is to give thanks, to express gratitude to the one who freed them, to realize how indebted we are to God and how there is no limit to the praising of God. May we all have a meaningful Pesach. May we all learn the lesson of what it is to truly be free and be able to give thanks where it is due. Shabbat Shalom and Chag Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. I wish you a very happy Pesach and a good spring season. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.